on the road. I'm Mark DiCarlo, your travel guru. She is James Beard Award-winning foodie journalist Jennifer English, and this is the only podcast you need to listen to for food and travel, which is what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk to a guy that's lived on nothing but beer for 40 days. I'm going to get a peek of my future, and Jennifer and I are going to chit-chat, which is what we're going to do now. How you doing, Jennifer?
I am well. I am well. And you know what? We're going to get new buttons here any minute now.
I noticed that buttons could be malfunctioning.
You know what? But I got a couple of nice buttons I want you to introduce you to. Welcome to radio when it's live and delicious. And here on AM 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk, we take you everywhere you want to go. We bring in the most incredible people doing the most delicious things. We have live from the city of gastronomy, all of these people lined up to share with us how to spend our time. And you want to know where bucket lists come from? They come from dreaming. And you know where dreaming comes from? The inspiration that we derive when we walk around the world and we open up our minds and our hearts. And then we read stories about guys that said, I'm giving up food. I'm only going to drink beer. And I'm going to lose, 30 or 40 pounds?
He lost over 40 pounds.
This sounds like a dream to so many. Did you know that Tucson, and how we tie this all together? Because I'm in Tucson, Arizona. You're in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
We're tying this all together. Did you know that Tucson, as a craft beer community, is one of the top 10 craft beer communities in the country, and that we punch way above our weight class city size-wise?
Get out of here.
I know you didn't believe me when I told you that, but it's...
Well, is it officially called the City of Gastronomy?
Well, we didn't give it... Yes, and we didn't give it that designation. In fact, UNESCO, the United Nations Cultural Organization, determined that for 4,000 years, peoples have been coming to the Sonoran Desert region and cultivating food. And by cultivating food, you're cultivating health and wellness. You're cultivating nutrition and community. You're cultivating conviviality. And so, with practitioners today like Don Guerra from Barrio Breads, reviving the tradition of growing the same kinds of wheat that have been grown here for 4,000 years. Do you know what you make out of wheat and grain?
Happiness.
And beer.
Right.
And yesterday we had Mike Malazzi from Borderlands Brewing Company on, and he says that we should listen to Benjamin Franklin, who reminds us that beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. And so this guy who only drank craft beer must be really happy. A little later on in the show, we're going to talk to the one and only Anne, who is on a road tour doing events. But first, we're going to talk about an extraordinary concert that is coming up with Jeff Gardner. If you don't have plans for this weekend, the associate editor of Tucson Weekly has some ideas about where you can spend your time. He joins us now live from the Tucson Weekly headquarters. Associate Editor Jeff Gardner, welcome back. What is going on this actual weekend that we can go and have some fun doing? Is Jeff gone? Have we lost?
He's having so much fun doing all kinds of things at the Weekly. He doesn't have time to talk to us.
He is having so much fun. So we're going to shift gears gently. And you know who is on the phone with us? Our friend Anne is in the house. And she's here. She is not here. She's here, but she's not here. She is on the road. And at present, she is in the Midwest on a tour doing extraordinary. Do you know that they're called galleries, that when you are somebody who's a practitioner of the metaphysical arts and you do live events, they're called galleries?
I did not know that. Like psychic galleries?
Yes. Isn't that cool?
I didn't know that.
So we're going to welcome her. And she has agreed, you've agreed, that we're going to look at what kind of summer we're going to have here on A Fork on the Road. Anne, welcome back. We've missed you. How are you?
Good. Thank you, Jen. Good.
We've missed having you.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
You tell me. I'm feeling pretty good.
Let's dump the psychic, huh? Okay.
Hey, Anne, I have a question. When you do your galleries, this is language that's new to a lot of people. And this summer, I know you're going to be touring and you'll be doing a lot of events. I didn't realize that an event that you would do is called a gallery. Where does that come from? What's that tradition? And what does it refer to? Do you know?
To be honest, you know, I just stumbled on the term myself, really, to be honest. But what it is basically is it's a, you know, just a room full of people, an audience, basically. And I just kind of stand up in front and walk, or I walk, typically I walk around the room. And I give readings to people who, you know, with spirits that come through.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us. When you do an event like that, does it happen right away that you start getting messages for who's ever in the room?
Yes, yeah. What happens with me, to describe it, and it's funny, I was just describing it to somebody yesterday, is I get a feeling of what most people would call anxiety. I fill up with this energy, and it kind of fills up my chest, and that's when I know I have spirit energy around me that needs to wants to communicate. And sometimes I can actually see the person. They you know, depending upon the energy that they have, and the strengths and the powers that they have to draw on, they can either make themselves completely visible to me, or they just communicate through just talking with words in my head, or pop, you know, or I see words, or they show me symbols and signs and things, or they make me feel things. I feel sensations. Like, they'll make me, if they had something, you know, wrong with the chest, what I would do is they might make me feel something in my chest, like, oh, I would, you know, make my chest hurt, or my lungs hurt, or if they had something, you know, something wrong with their hips or whatever, it's whatever physical thing was going wrong with them that they want me to portray as a sign or symbol of who they are or what they went through, that's what they do. I had a person who actually brought through the fact that he made me taste coffee, and then he made me taste cinnamon donuts, and then he also made me feel as if I was sitting at the table reading a paper. And sure enough, it happened to be this one woman's husband where they actually would drink coffee and eat the donuts that they had freshly made themselves. And that was like a little tradition that they had. And he would do that every morning, have his coffee and donuts and cinnamon donuts only.
That's so cool.
While reading his paper. Yeah. And so it's not like I said, oh yeah, I got this guy who, you know, is reading his newspaper every day. It was this specific thing, and it had to be specifically cinnamon sugar donuts. And so that's how she was just like, oh my gosh, you just totally described them. And nobody else in the room was, you know, having that. So you do know through that kind of stuff that this is, you can be kind of quite accurate with what's coming through.
Wow. Hey, Mark.
And I use these you know, abilities, Jen, because they help people. They heal people. Yeah. And that's what I do this for. I don't do it for a joke. I don't do it to, you know, it's my abilities are to help heal people.
Right. And when you come and visit with us, and Mark, I know, you know, summer's a busy time for everybody. We get a chance to make our summer vacation plans, you know, when's a good time to go, you know, where are we going to go? That kind of thing. That's not really what we're talking about here so much as, you know, should I go to the mountains or should I go to the ocean? I mean, that could be a yes, no question like that. Which one would you choose? But more importantly, you know, I think all of us want to know the kinds of things that are near and dear to us and important to us and important to who we really are. Now, the reason that Mark and I are such good friends is I don't know if you know this, we share the same birthday.
Oh, wow.
That's
neat.
So, Mark, where are we going to spend our birthday this year?
I know where I'm spending my birthday, and it's someplace I've never been before.
Okay. Where's that?
You want me to tell you, or do we want to do a reading?
Oh, well, it's not like that. It's not, you tell me, because I'm really...
Oh, I'm going to be...
Unless you don't want me to show up.
No. Well, you can come if you want. We're going to be in, I will be in London on that day.
Oh, nice.
Then we're going to Paris. Then we're going to Tuscany. Then we're going to Greece.
Man, that is amazing.
That sounds amazing.
That's a good vacation, brother.
It is. So I've been doing all the booking for all this European travel, and later in the show we can talk about the specifics of that. It's a minefield. Unless you have unlimited resources, There are so many tricks that you need to know to save yourself money and get the best flights and the best hotels and things like that. But it's a good time to be in Europe. It's a little crowded. I've never been there in the summer, but the opportunity came up and we had a jump on it.
Now, is this the kind of trip you take every year? Do you take a big summer trip, or is this like a trip of a lifetime kind of trip?
I'm more partial to road trips here in America for the summer. You know, I like putting the top down in the car and just going somewhere I've never been before. We were in Italy and Spain last September, and now we're going to go. Never been to London, never been to Paris, and that we're also going to Greece. And I've never been to the particular place we're going in Greece before.
Nice.
So I would say borderline trip of a lifetime.
That's awesome. For a trip of
I have a question for you, Mark, though, is with your trip, though. Are you, like, following or are you going to be visiting vineyards when you go there?
We might possibly...
vineyards that you have chosen?
Not yet, but we may see some vineyards in Tuscany and certainly in Greece.
Okay. Yeah, because I did get the vineyards, kind of the grapes and everything that you're just going to fall in love with. There's going to be one in particular, I think... Are you able to have, like, wine named after you?
I have a olive oil called DiCarlo. It's not mine. But somebody in Perugia, I think, makes a DiCarlo olive oil. I would love to have a DiCarlo wine, other than, are we there yet? That's the only DiCarlo wine I recall from my youth.
I'm hungry.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop picking on me.
But, yeah, no, because I was just getting grapes and vineyards, and I was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, he's going on, like, almost like a wine tour or something, because that's kind of what was coming up in my head when you were talking about that. I thought maybe you were going to say that you're going to be at all these vineyards.
You're absolutely right, because that's the road trip part of it. We're flying into Rome, and then we're driving up to visit friends in Tuscany, and they're in wine country. So we've got... like a 2-hour drive each way through wine country, and then we'll be staying in wine country there. And I believe there's vineyards on the Greek island that we're going to as well. So it's going to be a bacchanalian summer.
Hey, Anne, are you seeing something sort of that will touch his heart? Is there something special in store for him at one of these destinations?
Well, the reason why I ask is if he could have, you know, wine named after him or something, because they keep kind of showing me a specific bottle of wine, and it has a label, and it's just kind of like almost like his face. I don't even know what he looks like, but it just kind of like makes me feel like this is going to be like something personal for him. So that's
cool.
Why I was asking. I was asking about that. I don't know if it's for sure or not. I mean, you know, this is all just kind of symbols coming through for me. But I feel like there might be something special that, you know, I don't know if you're going to have an opportunity to create your own wine somehow, or but this shows me a specific bottle. And I feel like they're kind of making me feel like it's your face that's going to be on the bottle or something to do with you personally on that bottle.
Wow, that's great. Well, you know, one of the things I do like to do when we travel is take cooking classes in different regions, because... especially in Italy and Greece, every region, the Puglia region, has different food than Tuscany, different than Rome, different than northern Italy. And if you can find a good chef or a good person that really can cook some regional food, it's a great way to take some of it back home with you. You know, you learn whatever the specialty is of that area, and that's kind of making it like your own. But I would love a wine. Who would buy a wine with my face on it, though? That's the only question.
I would.
If it was good, I would.
my face or the wine? And what pose do you take? Do you take the serious vintner pose, or is it like a crazy hair on fire pose? I've had 4 bottles of this wine. I'm crazy. I guess I'll decide once I get there. But that's Anya, that's a great something to look forward to for us. That sounds cool. What else do you see? Are you reading tarot cards, or are you just getting images?
Well, I laid out the cards, and the first card is the King of Pentacles, and then on this card has the vineyard, and you holding the pentacles with which is money and material kind of value, and it shows vineyards and royalty behind you. With this card, and that was the very first card out. But also, I was being shown vineyards, and I was being shown in my head the bottle of wine, and I kind of feel as if it was like something personal for you, and that's what was happening here. And it does show you are going to love this trip.
You know what? It could
be a celebration going on here.
Yeah, we're going to be in Greece for a week with a woman that calls herself, or I call her, and she hasn't complained yet, the Queen of Greece. So maybe that's the royalty that you're seeing.
Maybe they're going to treat you like royalty.
That would even be better.
Yes, wouldn't that be better? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
like
you
Game
are going
of Thrones,
to enjoy
I'm going to have my own
something coming up here for you. Yeah.
What? All right,
you've
great. What else?
You've got the Ten of Cups, which shows that, you know, and you're going with your wife, right?
Yes.
Okay, good, because it shows the Ten of Cups here with the Queen of Cups, and that shows me that she's going to love this just as much as you, if not. And it will probably even be a nice little rekindling in your relationship there, so you might want to make sure you have some wine, you know, and, you know, when you go back to your hotel room. So
yeah, she's got to be pretty hammered to get on with me. I mean, that's just, I've accepted that. That's just the thing. I don't, you know, she's got her standards. Who am I to complain? But yeah, a lot of wine goes a little way.
Yeah.
The one and only Anne joins us with a reading for our very own Mark DiCarlo as he gets ready for his summer sojourn.
Right, and I'll be blogging and taking pictures and doing some videos the whole way, and we can talk about it on the show. I'm looking forward to it. It's just the whole trip just kind of fell into our laps. We weren't even planning it, but a bunch of friends are going to be over there at this particular time, and we're just going to go boom, 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 place to place to place. So it's kind of, I feel like the universe told us we need to take this trip this summer, so we're taking it.
Anne, thank you so very much. Let's remind everybody where your website is and what you're going to be up to next.
My website is anne.org, and I will be coming back to Tucson soon. So that's where I'll be. Right now, I'm currently in Wisconsin.
ONAE.org is the website. Anne, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen, and it was nice meeting you, Mark.
Ditto, Anne. Thank you for the insight. I will make sure to be on the lookout for that, and if I do end up with a wine with my picture on it, I'll bring a bottle back for you.
Yay! Good. Thank you.
Up next, Del Hall is with us. Mark DiCarlo and I are here on A Fork on the Road. Mark, take it.
All right. So people are always going on crazy diets, right? There's the cleanse diet. There's the paleo diet, which I personally like. There's keto. There's the birthday cake diet, I'm sure.
The birthday cake diet.
You know, I'm sure someone can convince themselves, well, if I only eat birthday cake for a month, I'll lose weight. Our next guest went on a very bizarre diet, I think, as the result of a crazy Mardi Gras. He works at a beer company, and he had nothing but beer for the entire duration of Lent. Let's welcome Del Hall to the show.
Del Hall, welcome. I think there's absolutely nothing unreasonable about this. I think this is one of the most reasonable diet ideas. I mean, it's no more ridiculous than anything. And I think, in fact, if you're a beer guy working at a beer company and you know what goes into it, I mean, how is it different than eating a bowl of porridge every day? It's just like a different composition of the porridge. Listen, we have to take a very quick break. And when we come back, Del Hall is going to tell us the secrets to losing 40 pounds by doing nothing but drinking beer. 2:24 p.m. This is Around the Table and A Fork on the Road with Mark DiCarlo. We'll be back with more right after this.
Yeah, 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 baby. This is A Fork on the Road. I'm Mark DiCarlo. She's Jennifer English. And we're about to meet a man who subsisted on a diet of nothing but beer for the holy period of Lent. Welcome to the show, Del Hall.
Hey, what's happening? What's going on?
We're just having a good old time here on A Fork on the Road. So let's set this up. How much... you've been working at the 50 West Beer Company for how long?
So I've been there for a couple years. Before that, I was a craft beer distributor. I sold a lot of different brands of beer, so I've been in the beer game about 8 years now.
Okay. And at your fattest recently, break this in. When I was in high school, I weighed 250 pounds. I was a fat ass. And I tried all kinds of different diets, and the only thing that worked for me at the time was I stopped having dinner and I'd have a small lunch and a small breakfast and I would run with the girls' track team after school and I lost It's a true story. Because I literally woke up one day and said, you know what? I'm so fat, I'm never going to get laid my entire life. And that was the motivation.
That sounds like an amazing plan.
Right? And I had a lot of girls on the team that were friends of mine, and I lost 70 pounds from Christmas to April, or to my birthday of that year. So I was highly motivated and lost a bunch of weight, and it worked for me. You know, obviously I was 16 or 17 or 18, whatever. So it's a much easier to lose weight when you're younger. You're in your 40s, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
And at your fattest, before you started this, what did you weigh?
292.5.
Wow.
See, that's how
I'm a little bit over 6'2".
First of all, I can't believe you asked that question. That is like, wow, I love this guy.
We talk about this stuff. Which, by the way, can I say something about the caller or your guest just before me?
Yes.
I find it hard to believe that she doesn't know what Mark DiCarlo looks like. I mean, look, Mark's been in show business for over 20 years.
I know.
How can she not know what he looks like?
I know, Del. The thing is? There are so many people who are in who are like really empathic, or they're in the world of metaphysics. They don't watch any television. They don't consume any media. Like, it's amazing to me how many people I meet that just, they're like, it's like they're on a different planet.
Well, I believed everything that she said except for that.
I like you already, Del.
So that is awesome.
At your fattest. Yeah. And believe me, when I was fat, you do all these tricks in your head. You know, oh, the blue shirt makes me look skinny. These white pants make me look svelte. My pants used to wear out on the inside of my thighs, right below my crotch, because my thighs would rub together. That's where my pants, that's how fat I am.
So, Mark, you do know that I'm wearing white pants and a blue shirt today.
Never looked thinner.
Let's put it this way: when I was over 290, and I spent $100 on one of those untucked shirts, and it still didn't make me look thin.
All right. So you wake up one day. You Lent is preceded, of course, the day before by Mardi Gras,
which is also called Fat Pants Tuesday.
It's called Caftan Tuesday. What did you do on Mardi Gras? Did you rip it up, Del?
So a little bit. So I have a tradition on Mardi Gras that's basically the only day, even though I was very obese, that I would only have donuts, because I was a rational person, just shouldn't have donuts any other day besides Fat Tuesday. So I did indulge. I had some donuts, and then I went to a traditional New Orleans themed restaurant and had like a po' boy for lunch. And then at dinner, I was working. So I was out at a bar, just kind of promoting 50 West Brewing Company and talking about beer and things like that, and just like had some hot wings and things, just normal bar food.
Okay. So you didn't go crazy on Mardi Gras, but you
I definitely overindulged.
Okay. All right. So then, when did this idea of subsisting solely on beer pop into your brain?
So look, when you get into beer and you start selling beer, you always hear the story of the monks in the 1600s back in Bavaria in Germany, that they came up with a special style of beer called Doppelbock. And the reason they came up with it was to make them sustain through Lent, because they would give up all solid foods. So they brew this beer they call liquid bread. So I've known about this for years and years being in the beer world, but I never knew if it was real, if it was fact or fiction. So about 6 months before Lent, I decided, I'm going to myth bust that this year. Like, I'm going to give it a whirl and see if it was something that could actually be done.
To get closer to Jesus.
No, it was basically just as a challenge, just to see if that story was BS or not.
No, Del, I completely get it. And you know what I love? I love that you wanted to dive deep in this, because the history and the tradition of the monks giving up other food and then enriching the brews that they were making.
Yep.
I love that idea.
Yeah, and that's basically, I mean, I'm a student of beer, right? I'm what's known as a beer geek. I mean, you know, beer pays my mortgage, and I sell beer, but it's also my passion in life. So I definitely wanted to, you know, I just wanted to debunk it, you know? And I did it this year, and I have, not only is it, you know, is it possible to do, it's actually probable. They probably did this.
So,
did you think you'd lose weight doing it? Just from a thinking point of view, did you really?
I absolutely. I mean, I was okay. So I've known I was going to do this for 6 months, right? So over the holidays, when you say like, you know what, I've had enough. I don't need to like, you know, keep eating. I don't want to put on any weight. I really didn't care. I really went, you know, full bore into the holiday season, and ate whatever I wanted and indulged in all the holiday food, and I packed on a few pounds. So I knew that I was going to probably lose some weight, but I didn't think I was going to lose as much as I did.
Can I ask a question? Did you because we will make the assumption that if all you did was drink beer and you lost all this weight, that it must have been the drinking of the beer and the giving up of like hard, you know, like solid foods that did this.
Right.
Did you do anything else? Did you walk more? Did you Did you join Peloton?
In fact, I think I walked less just because, you know, my doctor and then my doctor's husband is a pharmacist, and we're really good friends. And he was saying, you know, like, Del, you got to understand that, like, when the monks did this, you know, back then, they lived a very sedentary lifestyle. They lived a monk lifestyle. So they sat around and prayed all day. He's like, you're in a modern day world. You're going to be, you know, running around. You're going to be going to bars and restaurants. You're going to be out talking and doing speeches and things like that. I'm talking about beer. It's going to be completely different for you. So I made sure that I didn't, I wasn't going to run any marathons, or I wasn't going to, I wasn't going to do a lot of walking on a daily basis. So I didn't do any kind of what you would consider exercise.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about the first week. I mean, obviously, was there a shock to your system? How many beers did you drink in a day? Did you vary the beers?
That first week was horrible. So it really was. I mean, like,
it's like you got caught drinking when you were 15 and your dad said, oh, you want to drink? You're going to drink nothing but beer in front of me until you pass out.
Well, you know, the biggest part of it was just that we're such creatures of habit, right? So, I mean, if you're sitting around watching TV, you're probably snacking on something. And when you're driving around and you feel like a little hungry, you probably pull off to find a lunch spot. All those things, you know, if you're going on a date and you're saying, hey, I'm kind of like, what do you want to do tonight? It's, hey, let's go check out this new restaurant. There's so many things that revolve around food, and taking all that out of the equation, I found myself like not only just hungry, but I found myself bored. Like, wow, I got all this extra time on my hands.
Oh, interesting. What was the food you found you missed the most? Did your body have cravings that were unnatural?
Not really. It sounds weird from a guy that lives in Ohio, but I probably have sushi like once a week. Yeah, it's like the perfect food, right? So I found myself really craving sushi a lot. And then, you know, just being a Midwestern guy, you know, wings and steaks and stuff like that. I absolutely had cravings for those.
And of course, I said that and I teed it up like a softball for Mark DiCarlo, and to show his restraint, he just left it there.
I'm wondering if could you drive by a Skyline Chili store without getting the twitches?
Man, I tell you what. So, you know, taking away my digestive system and not eating, not chewing, so taking away taste, my other senses went crazy. And the first one I really noticed was my sense of smell. So basically anywhere you go in Cincinnati, Ohio, whether you know it or not, you're smelling Skyline Chili.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Del, let's go back to the historical piece of this. When the monks would brew a special kind of Doppelbock to make sure they were hitting more of the nutritional requirements on a daily basis, did you have the same beer at every meal? Did you go to like one flavor, or did you vary it up saying, I'm going to have all different kinds?
I varied it just because I wouldn't eat the same thing on a daily basis. So I didn't want to drink the same thing. I'm basically sacrificing all solid food, and only thing to keep it interesting was being able to drink different styles of beer and different flavors of beer. So I drank everything from sour beer and fruit flavored beers to really dark, chocolate stouts and things like that.
What was your best breakfast beer? How would you go through the day?
Most of the time I intermittent fast anyway, so I don't normally have breakfast. I would normally, you know, have my first meal a day around 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon anyway. So I'm not a big breakfast guy. But I did find myself sometimes during my travels, you know, I'm going to be at a beer conference or like a beer festival, and you would typically drink more like in the morning. So I would always, you know, there's a style of beer called a breakfast stout. And this is a really big, hearty stout. Normally a lot of alcohol, but normally they brew that with coffee. So you get, you know, like a lot of those flavors you would have in the morning.
One of the things, Mark, one of the things I'm really interested in this experience is, did you begin after a few days to pay attention to the fact, like if you drank coffee all day long, you just have way too much caffeine? Did you pay attention to the alcohol by volume or the proof of the beers that you were consuming? Did you?
I absolutely did. So, because one of the things you have to think about is that, so alcohol is a sugar, right? So the more alcohol content in a beer, normally the sweeter that beer is going to be, also means it's going to have more calories. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was getting, you know, enough calories to survive, and that I wasn't going to get a lot of backlash from, like, you know, people saying, hey, you're going to die because you're not eating. You know, I've kind of studied fasting a lot, and I knew that I had enough body fat on me. I could probably drink water and survive, but I did want to make sure that I drank enough calories that it wouldn't cause me any physical harm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow.
But I was still, I mean, I was in a caloric deficit. I mean, even the biggest days, I mean, I might have had 1,500 calories on those days. And I know I was losing, you know, at the beginning, you talk about that first week, I was losing a couple pounds a day.
Wow.
Now, I've done the cleanse, the master cleanse before, where all you drink is the lemon juice with the cayenne pepper and
maple syrup.
That's it. And I find after the first two or three days, like, I don't miss the actual eating part. You know, you feel kind of light and lean. And did you go through the same thing with the beer?
Absolutely. So that first week after, like, you know, the habits of eating and kind of being bored, and then basically the hunger, I found out that hunger really isn't in your stomach. So true hunger really is in, like, a tightening in your throat. And it's kind of a thirst that never gets quenched. And kind of like as a survival technique that your body goes through that. I found that once that first week was kind of over, and this was like 6 or 7 days in, that all that left. And I really wasn't hungry anymore. The only time I would get hungry was if I were around, you know, food in some manner. Maybe, you know, I had to work at a bar and I smelled their wings, or I smelled something that triggered something. But on a day-to-day basis, I wasn't like just, you know, walking around just, man, you know, I'm so hungry. I have to eat. I'm so hungry.
Do you live in a place where you can get around in public transportation? Or, like, how did you deal with the fact that for 40 days you were essentially tipsy?
Well, see, that I wasn't. So, you know, I stayed hydrated. So, you know, I was very cognizant of the fact of how much alcohol I was taking in, because the only way that I thought I would end up harming myself is if I got dehydrated. So I was drinking a lot of water. I was drinking at least a gallon a day. And then when I drank, you know, I would have my first beer like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I probably wouldn't have another one until 4 or 5 o'clock. And then if I had to drink for an event or anything like that, I Ubered everywhere. So, you know, that's one thing working for a brewery. You know, my Ubers are on my expense account, so it's something I don't have to worry about expense-wise.
Wow.
And so you would treat each beer like a meal. Would you have two beers per meal?
Every now and then. I mean, it's
important. Or just whatever you want.
How I felt. Yeah, I basically did whatever I wanted. On average, I would say I averaged 3 beers a day. So, you know, there were a few days that I only had one beer all day long because that's all I really felt like. And then there were some days I had 7 or 8 beers because I was in Denver, Colorado at a beer festival.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So one of the things I find interesting...
One beer for a whole day? That's crazy.
Yeah.
You didn't ask how big the bucket was.
Yeah, it was one beer.
It was one big beer. Hey,
I drank it out of a kiddie pool.
That's funny. One of the things I'm curious about, because of course now I'm like completely riffed on this. Sure. Did you drink, are you a coffee drinker? And what did you do about your caffeine intake?
I am. So, you know, I made the rules to this up. So my rules were I was not going to take any calories in my body except for beer. I could still have, you know, water, unsweetened tea, black coffee, and those are the beverages that I could have. So, you know, I'm normally like a 2 coffee a day guy. I mean, like a large coffee, like 2 large 20-ounce coffees. About a week into it, I found that I would drink probably 6 ounces of coffee and get the jitters.
Wow.
Sure. Because your body.
So my tolerance for caffeine went way down. So there was, the, you know, probably the last 2 weeks, I didn't have any coffee at all.
Wow. Hey, you guys, we need to take a very quick break. This is A Fork on the Road. I'm sorry. Del, can you hang out for a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
Because, of course, I have about 100 more questions. And we want to take calls and questions from the audience, 520-790-2040, if you want to know. And if you wanted to design your own custom beer diet, is this something he recommends? Stay tuned. Mark, take it.
We will be right back with more Jennifer English and myself, Mark DiCarlo, on A Fork on the Road. We're learning all about beer and health with Del Hall from 50 West Brewery in Cincinnati, Ohio. Stick around. Welcome back to A Fork on the Road. I'm your travel guru, Mark DiCarlo. She is James Beard Award-winning journalist Jennifer English, and we're
Hello.
Talking to Del Hall, who survived on nothing but beer for 40 days and sounds healthier, wealthier, and wiser for it.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, who can afford to drink beer for 40 days like that? That must have cost you a fortune.
Not when you run a brewery for a living.
Oh, that's right.
So I think I was uniquely positioned to do this, right? I mean, like, it doesn't cost me anything to drink beer. I have unlimited amounts of beer. It also doesn't cost me to Uber everywhere I want to go because that's an expense in my world. So it was pretty easy on that side of things for me to do this.
What was your social life like during this? Are you married? Are you single?
He's like, I met a cop.
Yeah. So I'm single. I've been divorced for a long time now. But I date. And I thought, you know, that's kind of like the hardest part was like going on dates and you know, being that weird guy that if it was a first date from like Tinder or something, that, you know, like you're a weird guy that's not eating. But, you know, other than that, I have a very social job and working for a brewery, I have to socialize. So I probably go out 5-6 days a week. And it was kind of tough to be around that kind of temptation and not indulge.
What do the girls say when you're sitting across the table and I'm sure they're having dinner and you have to tell them the story, right?
So I set them up, right? Before I went out with anyone, I told them what I was doing and you know, and for the most part, everyone was really respectful. They're just like, wow, that's super cool. Like, you know, I'll eat before we meet and let's just get together for some drinks. And that's perfect.
That's so funny. You know, we have a lot of friends in the beer world here in Southern Arizona, and there were some Facebook messages coming through from people who are actually at work in the food industry because it's lunchtime and you know they're working right now. But a couple of people said they would say that if I asked them what mix of beers would work, we got a couple people that said a steady diet of sour fruit beers mixed with light ABV pale ales. That would be the great combo. What was your perfect mix of beers?
You know, I think it was just, I was so concerned about just having enough calories on a daily basis that it was the stout. It was the darker stuff. And it was also, they're super flavorful nowadays. We call them pastry stouts because they have all these adjunctions in them. So, you know, it's not like you just have a normal, like a Guinness anymore. You have these stouts that have vanilla and coconut and maple syrup and you know, chocolate and cacao nib inside the beer. So I found myself going for those a lot because they're also very filling. So they're very viscous, you know, so the viscosity is a lot. And I felt like I got kind of like a little sustenance in my, a little filler in my belly.
Almost like you're drinking a milkshake or something.
Absolutely, right? I mean, people kept saying, like, oh, you're on no solid foods. Does that mean you're drinking protein shakes? Or, like, no, like, no calories except for beer. But some of the stouts that I'm drinking are thick like a shake.
How did you survive without protein for a month?
So your body is an amazing thing, right? I mean, your body is known to go through periods of feasting and famine. So, you know, as when we were involved as hunter-gatherers, we went for days and sometimes weeks without eating. So as long as you have the body fat, your body's going to always utilize the body fat before it goes after protein in your muscles.
Wow.
That's true. Wow. Now, I know you're not advocating other people. I know you're not advocating other people do this as a weight loss.
No way.
Plan. You've been off of.
And you're not a doctor, and you're not going to give medical advice.
No, not at all.
Gotcha.
And all the other things we have to say so the station doesn't get sued. How long have you been off the diet now, and what happened with your weight since you've been off?
So it's been a month now, right? So Easter was exactly, I think, a month as of today. So I've put on 8 pounds. So I lost 44 pounds over the 46 days of Lent. And now I think I've normalized. I've put on 8 pounds, and I thought I would put on somewhere between 5 to 10, eating a normal diet. But I haven't really been eating what you would say a normal diet. I figured I would take this as an opportunity to almost do like a backwards elimination diet, where people would always like try to find out if there's an allergen in their system, so they would absolutely remove that. I've been slowly adding things back to my diet to see how it affects me. So, one day I brought back in gluten, and then I brought back in dairy products and lactose, and then I brought back in, seafood. I brought back, I was just doing like nitrates. One day, so I've been using that kind of like as an experiment, and to see how different foods affect me.
What have you learned?
So I've learned that there's probably something to I'm not a celiac, but I absolutely think that there is I might be a little gluten intolerant. I also feel like I'm a little lactose intolerant, and I feel worse. So the worst that I felt was when I brought back soda, right? Like I was like, all right, I'm gonna drink soda one day, and I'm not just gonna drink like high fructose corn syrup. I'm just gonna like naturally sugar, root beer and things like that. And I found myself just at the end of the day, like dying of thirst.
Mm-hmm.
It made me so thirsty to drink sugary drinks again.
Yeah, wow. they're not good for you.
Hey,
yeah, they're horrible.
Guys, I got a message from Mike Malazzi from Borderlands Brewing, and he's confirming that, yeah, beer fasting is in fact a thing. And at the breweries here in Southern Arizona, they see this frequently. I don't think they all go for 40 days of Lent, but what's the normal? Did you do any research on what would like be the optimal version of days of this? Like,
no, but I think that, so what I want to do now that I've acclimated back into the eating world and I'm going to start
the
eating,
world.
Right? It sounds weird to even say, but I want to start, just keeping beer in the context of not necessarily a health food, but it's definitely healthier than a lot of the standard American diet and a lot of the fast food options and processed foods that we use. So, I'm going to actually continue to fast. And I'm going to start doing some shorter fasts, 48 hours, 72 hours, maybe 5 days, and continuing to drink beer and see what works best for me.
Wow. Now, I have to ask a question. Will you suggest that there should be or could be more to our appreciation of craft beers? We in Southern Arizona and the Arizona Craft Beer Guild are really well respected in your industry, as I understand it. Do you think that there is a thing that can emerge from this about, I just want to talk about beer respect, the fact that you could thrive during this period?
That's the thing, right? So if you think about the standard American diet and the kind of processed foods that we all eat on a daily basis, craft brews, basically, they're not necessarily organic, so we don't use all organic, but they're as close to like farm to table as some of the best, restaurants in the country. So we use all natural ingredients. We don't use anything artificial. It's made in an artisan way on a small batch, level. So, I think when you look at that compared to something that's highly processed, it has to be healthier for you.
It has to be.
That's a that's a good point. The last time we went to Europe in September, we ate all day long. We ate, you know, and ate whatever we wanted all day long, fruits, meats, everything, and actually lost weight on the trip because, A, you're walking everywhere. Yep. But I think more importantly, B, there's no processed foods over there. Right. Or there aren't as much. I mean, you walk up and, you know, you pull everything is an open air market and it's farm to table. It's been there maybe a day at the most. And I think that's so much healthier than, you know, going down the brightly colored aisles in the grocery store.
Right. And you know, you want to think about, you know, quality over quantity, where it seems like, you know, everything is like supersized and just large quantities of food in Europe. You get everything on a small basis, but it's the highest quality food you can possibly get. And it really satiates you, right? I mean, you taste that. Everything from your palate to your gut feels that that's a high quality food. And you don't feel like you have to have more of it. Where when we eat these empty calories here in America, it feels like, you know, your stretch receptors aren't even firing in your stomach. And your gut says, hey, feed me more, even though you've given it twice the amount of calories it needed. But because it's such poor quality food, it doesn't register in your system.
Hey, Dale, did this make your sales go up?
Slightly. It didn't, you know, we only sell our beer in two states right now. So it's not a, you know, like I got national and international publicity out of this. But unfortunately, unless you're in, you know, Ohio or Kentucky, you're not going to be able to buy my beer.
Gotcha. Hey, listen, thanks an awful lot for being here.
Oh, it was great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it was great meeting you, Dell, and a really great story. And I wish you continued success with your health and with your business. And what a great fun. Are you going to do it next Lent?
I hope to not have enough body fat on me next Lent to do this. But if I do, I probably will do it again.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us on A Fork on the Road. That's Dell Hall from 50 West Brewing. She is Jennifer English, the James Beard Award-winning foodie journalist, and I'm Mark DiCarlo, your travel guru. What'd you think about today's show, Jennifer?
This was so fun, but I'm not giving up food for beer, although, you know, I thought about it for a minute. Hey, listen, everybody, thanks
so much.
We'll be back next week with another Fork on the Road, and we'll be back tomorrow with more Around the Table, the Tucson Foodie Edition. Up next, John C. Scott, the legend, will be right here. When you get home, hug your kids and count your blessings.